Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I know it's not worth anything at this point of the calendar, but the reports are terrific. You know, he's added a lot of good muscle. He's added a lot of flexibility. Most importantly, his arm feels terrific. He's experiencing no discomfort whatsoever when throwing and when testing his arm. And, you know, he's walking around with a little bit of confidence. I think that reflects how he's feeling about himself physically. And now, you know, now the important part starts, which is taking that into spring training and then into the season and being ready for the battle and getting some really good hitters out and being someone that we can lean on in that rotation.
Chicago Cubs annual convention was this past weekend. That was Theo Epstein, team president, talking about the rehabilitation of Yu Darvish and what they hope to get from him this year. We've been talking mostly football all night long, a lot of NFL playoffs, Super Bowl, some college draft season now underway. The Senior Bowl in Mobile kicked off earlier this evening. We got a report from there with Eric Edholm. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Gurney Volkswagen. When searching for a new Volkswagen, search for GurneyVW.com. And being the Cubs fanatic that I am, being that this is the home of the Chicago Cubs, the radio home, that is, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com, Chicago Cubs Radio Network, I thought I'd go to the best Cubs writer in town to find out what went on at the convention this weekend. And Gonzo is not only my favorite baseball writer, my favorite Cubs reporter, he's my favorite Oakland Raiders fan. And so it is my pleasure to welcome in Mark Gonzalez. Mark, how is the offseason treating you so far?
Well, I guess I could start saving my money for that trip to London next year, huh?
There you go. Yeah, that'd be. See if we can get the paper to put you on that one. Yeah, we could find a few pubs to crawl around in London. Interesting. It's a Raiders home game for obvious reasons. They don't have a home, so they might as well play one in London next year. They weren't going to take a home game away from Bears fans.
No, they weren't. But what a great experience for both teams and both cities' fans that experienced that.
Mark, we know, I mean, we've heard it for years and years, but particularly when they're winning, but in general, Chicago is a Cubs and a Bears town. And right now, I don't know if it's ever been more so. Obviously, a lot of well-deserved buzz around the White Sox with some of the moves they've tried to make this year. They're still waiting for the big ones to come true. And it's been interesting to me that there's almost this sense of disappointment around the team that finished the season with the best record in the National League last year. And I know that expectations are going to be high when you won a World Series a couple years ago. You're expected to win more. They don't want to be the Bears who only won in 85, and yet we're supposed to be so great. And yet I am a little surprised at what almost feels like some of the negativity around the ball club right now.
Yeah. You know, looking back at the past off seasons when they did make significant moves, they struck early, and I think that heightened the expectations, the hope, the hype, you know, dating back to John Lester signing at the winter meetings in 2014 in December. That happened in December, and then the following year with Bam Bam Bam. I mean, they struck quick with Lackey trading Starlin Castro to the free up playing time for Ben Zobrist, who they traded, and they capped off that week by signing Jason Hayward. And then the following year after they won the World Series, it was acquiring Wade Davis at the winter meeting. So, and then last year with Brandon Morrow and Steve Cechek at the winter meeting. So they've had a knack for striking quick and making a statement. And I think that what happened those years kind of heightened the expectation they do something like that, especially after Theo made his comment about performance over talent. And here we are, less than 3 weeks away from going down to Arizona, and there hasn't been that big significant move other than Daniel Descalzo. So I can see why there's some consternation among the fans.
Mark, there also is a perception with some, and this may be more just media insiders, those of us who sit around and kick it around, that there may have even been a bit of a disconnect, that maybe Theo hoped to have more money to spend than in fact he does, the idea that they were going to be big players for Bryce Harper. I find it very hard to believe that Tom Ricketts and Theo Epstein weren't clear with each other as to what the budget might be going into the offseason.
Well, I think even before they were handed the budget, you know, Theo had warned us all about, you know, sometimes going out and getting that big ticket guy, you know, doesn't always work. And it happened in Boston with him. I think you can say it's happened here with Jason Hayward. But sometimes you're better off hoping for bounce back years. And there was one thing at one of the panels that he mapped out that I thought was very revealing, that you want to go into an off season where guys are coming off great years, probably better years than what you think they're doing. And then the second part is you have a lot of guys who have tradable contracts. And then last of all, you have flexibility where you have a lot of money to spend. Well, I don't think they had any of those three. So, you know, adding all that up, I don't think you had much wiggle room to add somebody of significance in terms of money.
You know, Mark, it's another topic that I think I'm in a very small minority on, but nonetheless, I have an opinion. Did the Jason Hayward signing really not work? I know he's not a $185 million player, but do they win a World Series without him? Do they win as much as they have since he got here?
Well, his defense is superb, so I think you can make a case that they don't win it without him. I mean, his defense was superb, and a lot of people made a big deal about that speech. Certainly, it came at the right time. I think at that point, when they got him, you know, a lot of that, the contract, the size of the contract was based on projection. You know, he was 26, and you saw him put together a very, very good year with the Cardinals, and everybody thought, okay, he's turned the corner and all that. And in the past, you see guys getting that kind of money. But now I think a lot of owners have wised up and lean more toward that short-term deal where you may give a player a lot of money in terms of annual average salary, but the length isn't that long.
You know, Mark, I can make an argument that if Yu Darvish is healthy and just Yu Darvish, nothing even unusual or special. And if Cole Hamels is 85-90% of what he was last year, that you may have the best rotation in baseball. You can make an argument that with a nucleus of Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, and Contreras, if they're all healthy and play to their ability, that they've got, you know, one of the toughest nucleuses and lineups in baseball. I can make an argument for the front end of the bullpen. What I can't find the answer to is what are they doing on the back end?
I think you're on to something there as far as the rotation goes. If you can get 180 innings out of Darvish, and I'm not going to say 200 because I think that's asking a lot considering he didn't pitch a lot last year. But I think if you get 180 innings out of him, that says he's pitching deeper than he did last year, staying healthy. And I noticed a guy that had better body language at the convention. I know, you know, you still got to get on the mound and show what you can do, but I just saw a guy who looked more upbeat, more sure of himself around the team and around the media. So I think that's a start. And you see the video of him throwing already. That's an encouraging sign. And with Hamels, I think he's got a pretty good idea of, you know, back in the National League. And I think more important, he was talking about this Saturday, is fine-tuning his mechanics. You know, he had an issue with a oblique injury that kind of carried on, and his residual effect, he was allowing a lot of homers in Texas, and part of it was he had a flaw in his mechanics, and he detected it, got it corrected, and you saw what he did in the second half. So you look at those two guys and you say, yeah, the rotation's got a chance to be the elite in the National League. But on the flip side, they might have to pitch deep because the bullpen to this point really doesn't have the length that it did at the end of last season. You know, you don't have Chavez here. You don't even have Justin Wilson. A lot of people might roll their eyes, but this guy, as far as inherited runners, he was a lockdown guy last year. You can't discount that, especially because the bullpen was I think second best in the majors, but they got out of a lot of jams. There was a lot of traffic there. They also had 600 changes pitching changes last year, tops in the majors. That's a lot of weight to carry. And I think to ask these guys to do it again with the same guys, that's asking a lot. I think you're going to need some one or two more fresh arms before you start feeling really good about the pitching staff as a whole.
So there's a really, I don't know if interesting is the right word, because it's very troublesome to a lot of people, but interesting is the only word I can come up with, story developing here. I know that, you know, you're in Chicago. We're aware of all these sports. We know what happened with Kareem Hunt in Kansas City. The Chiefs just wanted him gone. There's a groundswell now here in Chicago on one side to bring him in. There's another camp that says we don't want any part of him. And then I turn around and look at the Cubs and where they're at with Addison Russell. And I understand what they're trying to do sounds good to me. I do think that you try and help people and you try and make them better. And as long as they're earning that chance, you continue to work with them. And yet we really don't yet know much about what really went on, where he's really at. He is suspended for 40 games. How do you think this is all going to play out over the next 6 months?
I think Theo said it best when he said, you know, for all the talk about his rehabilitation from all this, we're only in the second inning in this. And he said that. And I think, first of all, there was a victim involved. I think we got to pay attention to that and make sure, you know, the victim is doing okay. Then second, you know, make sure Addison's checking off all the boxes as a person and going through the proper steps that is required in this program. And then you see if he gets to the point where he's completed all his requirements, and then you see him work out and then take it from there. But at this point, you know, I would caution, is because I think people might be getting a little too far ahead and reading into this too much, because there is a process he has to go through. And I'm not trying to downplay the fact that there's a victim, because there's a victim involved here. And that's paramount in terms of importance, making sure the victim's okay. But in terms of Addison, I think he's got a long way to go. I don't know the details of the steps, but I think they're going to take a deliberate approach to all this and make sure that he's passed all the requirements, and then we'll take it from there once he gets on the field in spring training.
So I'm guessing he was not at the convention.
No, he's suspended, and I think it's probably in the best interest he wasn't there.
So moving forward now, here's the biggest puzzle to me of all. And again, this is just as a fan looking in from the outside. It didn't feel like Theo was completely comfortable with the job Joe Maddon did last year. I thought Joe Maddon had his best year as manager of the Cubs. Where does the truth lie in all that?
Well, I think everybody's under scrutiny at this point, and I think in the case of Joe, I thought he did a superb job, just given what he had to work with, especially with an offense that really didn't generate a lot of run support for the pitchers early in games. You know, Joe had to go to the bench early, fifth or sixth innings in games, because there was just no offense, and he had to do that. Then the bullpen certainly did well, but was taxed, and the offense, you know, he had no choice but to mix and match there. So, you know, on the flip side, I'm sure they're probably disappointed, you know, the way Strope went down the last 2 weeks, letting him bat and all that. You know, Schwarber had a back injury. Maybe he needed more rest, but, you know, and then Javi was tired. But you know what? You got to go with your best at that point. So, there are a few things I'm sure they were curious about, to say the least. And I think it's funny, because at the end of the season, you could tell that, you know, there certainly was some I don't want to say tension, but there was some disappointment there between the two. And then Saturday, you know, Theo came out and said, "Yeah, my hope is that he's back after 2019." So somewhere in between, there's reality.
You know, Mark, it's funny. I remember explicitly watching that game, that moment, and there are a lot of things that you can, you know, second guess and criticize Joe for, but he had to let Strope bat. He didn't have a closer. He needed him back in the next. Now, maybe he went to him an inning too soon. I don't know, but it sure didn't occur to me, oh, gosh, maybe he'll pull a hamstring. I can't let him hit here.
Well, Randy Rosario, I believe, was available. I'd have to look it up, but you know, and Strope was a former infielder, and so, you know, he's used to swinging a bat, and sometimes you get caught up in the moment trying to beat a throw to first base, but nevertheless, you know, he did get hurt, and it taxed him for the last 2 weeks.
One more for you, Mark. I'll let you go, but to me it's the biggest question of all. You mentioned there wasn't enough offense. Obviously, the biggest reason is your MVP missed a third of the season, and when he came back, he couldn't get the ball out of the park. I'm not hearing any conversation about it. Apparently, everybody's comfortable that shoulder is completely healthy and he's going to be fine?
Yeah, he says he's never felt better. And the video shows that he's swinging as hard as he can, as he said, and made eye contact with a few reporters when he said that. So I think the bigger issue is going to be when he starts facing live pitching, is he going to be able to pull the ball and drive it? Because I didn't see it too often when he came back for good in September. I just didn't see any balls hit with authority to the left side of the field.
All right, Mark, I said I'd let you go, but I got to let you speak your piece before you do. Are you a John Gruden fan yet?
No, I didn't like the way he left the first time when he was yanking the chain of Mr. Davis and you know, playing up the Notre Dame job, and the way he bailed on that team. I need to see more. You know, as Mr. Davis used to say, you know, it's a vicious struggle to be number one, and he's got a long way to go.
Yeah, I will say this. I am not a fan, but he did have that team playing for him the last 3 or 4 weeks, which after the way the season had gone until then did surprise me a little bit. And I can tell you, because of a relationship with the ball club, the Khalil Mack deal is not on him, nor is the Amari Cooper deal. Those are on the young Mr. Davis, who really doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, but he's getting a palace built in Vegas, so, and that's a tax-free state, so he's living pretty well.
Oh, yeah, it's all going to work out well in the end, and they will have the money to go back and buy some players like that, but I know it's been frustrating for a lot of Raiders fans. Hopefully this year will be better, both in Cubs Nation and Raiders Nation. Mark, thank you much for taking time out for us tonight.
Take care.
That is Gonzo, Mark Gonzalez. You can follow him on Twitter at MD Gonzalez. You can read him in the Tribune all season long. Best baseball writer in town, along with our very own Bruce Levine here at The Score. We're going to take a quick break. It's your phone calls the rest of the way out, guys. Whatever is on your mind, I'd love to talk to you about it. 312-644-6767. Got one of our reporters down in Mobile right now starting to get to work on the draft. I will be heading for Atlanta I'm going on Monday this year. We've got the Super Bowl covered for you wall to wall. Let's call and talk about it. 312-644-6767. We're back in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back, all. Hub Arkish sitting in for Lawrence Holmes tonight until 10 o'clock. I will hand it off to Julie DeCaro at that point. I know Julie has a great show planned for you all. A couple more hours of the best sports talk in town, so stay right where you are at. We're going to wrap it up with your phone calls for the next half hour or so. 312-644-6767. We will take a look at the text line as well if you want to text us at 67011. And before I get back to these calls, I've got something to give away. We've got something, a lot of fun. It is a chance to see Impractical Jokers on August 10th at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. If you haven't seen the TV show, you'll have a lot of fun. You get out and see their live show at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. The value of the tickets is $80, and we're going to give a pair away to the sixth caller, but it's got to be at the contest line. So hold on now before you start dialing. The contest line is 312-591-6700. Now dial them up. 312-591-6700. That is to win a pair of tickets to see Impractical Jokers on August 10th at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Now, if you want to talk to me, if you want to talk to Chicago sports fans across the city, you got to dial us up at a different number. That is 312-644-6767. That is where Carl called from Joliet. And Carl, I appreciate you hanging on. How you doing?
Hey, it's great to talk to you, man.
Thank you.
Long time, first time.
Thank you.
Well, about this no call yesterday, and, you know, I've had a day to digest it. It was a great weekend of football, fantastic games, of course. But, you know, it just did make that first game kind of unclean, if you follow me. What about having a senior, you know, maybe retired ref up in the tower watching the game so that he could call down and say, hey, guys, look at this. What do you think?
Well, they do, actually, Carl. There is an NFL advisor in the press box at every game, and they are in touch, I believe, with both New York and the field. Now, they can't they are not there to tell them what to do on the replays or when to replay things, but they are up there to try and assist and oversee the officiating. I'm not sure exactly what the NFL advisor in the press box can and can't do, but there is up there somebody up there watching. I think, again, what it comes back to is on something that obvious, you would want there to be some kind of potential correction, but the slippery slope is, well, how do you decide which plays get corrected and which ones don't? You know, and what if you have six or seven calls like that in a game and you're going to add six or seven more replays to the potential four or five challenges and six or seven scoring plays that they're overturning? Everything is a slippery slope with this. That's the problem, you know. And so it seems like an easy thing to fix. But as Sean McVay pointed out, and I believe it was the Rams' first field goal on which on third down there was a blatant face mask on Jared Goff, which was not called. The Rams were forced to settle for a field goal. Had the face mask been called, they would have had first and goal inside the 10. And so maybe they get 4 points there. I mean, there are so many places in the game where you can find that. And I don't know how you fix it all. I think it's either got to be perfect or it's got to be flawed. It can't be somewhere in between. And I haven't heard a suggestion yet that makes it perfect. That's the thing I struggle with.
And, you know, and I do, I get that. I really do. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, this sudden death overtime. Not so thrilled with it. Do you have any ideas on how to fix that?
I do. Again, I don't think it'd be perfect, but I know what I would prefer. And actually, overtime is no longer sudden death. It used to be, but with the rule change, you know, the way it works now is the team that wins the toss, if they fail to score or they kick a field goal, the other team gets a possession. If they score a touchdown on the opening drive, or if they give up a defensive touchdown on the opening drive, the game is over. So in that case, it's kind of like sudden death. What I don't understand is why a field goal allows the other team a chance, but a touchdown doesn't. To me, this one should be real simple. Overtime should allow both teams to get the ball at least once, no matter what they do with it. And after each team has had a possession, if the game is still tied, then the next team to win, the next team to score wins. And I think that's fair because people tend to forget that defense is supposed to be a part of this too. It's not just offense, you know. And if you want to win the game, you got to play offense and defense, not just go out and score points. So the only issue I have with the overtime rule as it stands currently is I don't think it should be only a field goal that allows the other team a possession. I think both teams should be guaranteed a possession, at least one in overtime. And then once they've each had that chance, then it's just a regular football game. Next team to score wins.
Okay, I did have another idea.
Sure.
I don't know if this is going to sit well with anybody, and actually I'm still kind of fighting with it myself, but let's just say that they threw this into one more quarter. And, you know, the end of the quarter, the team that's ahead wins, of course. But let's just say, okay, that quarter ends up with it tied again. What about throwing special teams at it and taking a note off of the hot cage where it turns into a shootout? And now I'm thinking about either a field goal shootout or a kickoff shootout.
Yeah, Carl, I don't like that. I mean, I you know, there may be some people who do, but now you're not playing football anymore. And by the way, it's interesting you bring up the NHL. Because we grew up rink rats in the old barn. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan, and I hate what they did to overtime. I mean, the whole, you know, suddenly it's 4-on-4 for 5 minutes. Why? It's 5-on-5 for 60 minutes, and then it's 4-on-4 for 5 minutes. What sense does that make? And then you go to the shootout. Now it's just two players. Now it's not even a team sport anymore. So I'm not a fan of that. I hate the college overtime rule because that's like a video game. I mean, you know, who starts at the 25-yard line? So I think the NFL is actually closest to doing it right, and I just, you know, I don't think you're going to come up with perfect, but anything that suddenly is not the same game anymore. I don't know why you would play by different rules in terms of how many people are on the field or you know, how you score points or how you win. I mean, that suddenly you're not playing the same game anymore. That'd be my problem with it.
Yeah, and I do get that, but we all realize that, both Major League Basketball and the NFL, they're trying to keep the people in the stands, engaged in the game by, not necessarily shortening it up, but, making more action on the field, mm-hmm. In a shorter amount of time. I don't want to see the game go away just to please the people sitting in the stands who are freezing or, for whatever reason. I never myself was interested in a shorter Major League Baseball game or a shorter football game. I would go there to see the game in its entirety, mm-hmm. Not just shorter. Well, thank you for your time. I've used up enough of it. Let's hear what other people have to say.
Carl, thank you for your call. I do appreciate it. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at nusports.com. Our phone number, 312-644-6767, taking your calls. I don't have a huge problem with the overtime rules the way they are. I did think it was a shame, both in Super Bowl 51 and again yesterday, that as impressive as Brady and the Patriots were, it does seem like if they're going to get a shot, the Falcons should have gotten a shot, the Chiefs should have gotten a shot yesterday. Who knows what Mahomes and the Chiefs might have done. And then, as I said, after that, then I would make it next team to score. So maybe the Patriots just do it again immediately, but at least both teams would have had a chance to play offense and defense. So that's kind of my take on it. Let's go out to Manuka and see what Tom has on his mind. Tom, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. What's up?
You guys were talking about the Cubbies earlier, and one of the things that seemed to me, I really don't have the numbers in front of me, is when Madden started batting the pitcher eight,
mm-hmm.
It seemed like the run production really fell off. And I don't know what their runs per game were. I know they actually, win percentage-wise, they were pretty close. But I was just wondering if the run production, because it seemed like at the end of the year, the run production fell off, and that's when the pitchers started showing up in the eight spot.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tom, I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't have the stats in front of me. I do know that as the season went on, you lost your MVP, Chris Bryant, for a third of the season. You lost Jason Hayward, who was off to a good start for 6 weeks with the hamstring. You lost some of your bats for periods of time. I think that probably had more to do with the run production than necessarily the pitcher batting eighth. I'm assuming that Madden has statistics to back up why that's a good idea. I know what they say about assuming. Maybe I shouldn't, but I wish I had a better answer for you. I'll tell you what, though. I will make sure. This is the home of the Chicago Cubs on the radio, so I will have someone look into that one for you and keep listening, and we'll get that discussed on one of the shows I'm on during the course of the week because the numbers are out there. I just don't have them readily available, and I apologize for that. I do thank you for the call, though. Let's get one more before. Well, I don't know if he's there or not. Is Joe on the far northwest side? It looks like he's there. Okay, let's try Joe and see what's on your mind tonight. Joe, how you doing?
How you doing, Herb? Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
But I tell you, the Super Bowl, I was just telling your guy answering the phone, or Mike, that it looks like a replay of the 2018 World Series, Boston versus Los Angeles, I'll tell you, all over again, but the football end of it. But you know what, Herb? You know, looking at the Cubs in 19, some of the keys besides health and fundamental baseball is that, our starters got to go longer than three innings as well as four innings, overtaxing the bullpen three quarters of the season. I think consistency is another big play, in my opinion. We still need a steady Eddie in the leadoff spot, as far as I'm concerned, and a reliable closer. Two things the Cubs don't have, with the exception of by-committee decisions, again, going in. But as far as Joe Madden's concerned, I would stop some of these side shows. I don't go for it. Like putting Rizzo on the mound to pitch, as well as playing third base. And, put some more of these players on the spot, like Contreras, who loves to stand when he hits the ball. He thinks the ball's going to go in left field. And it turns out he turns a double into a single. That's happened several times, Hub. But last but not least, the revolving door of the coaching staff we've had for the last 3 years. We need a little consistency there. And the players, which way do I go? should I go for launch angle or should I go for the gap double? You know, who the heck knows? But thumbs up to Ricketts and Theo for staying away from these big ticket players. You know, just ask Brian Cashman how he's doing. You know, you got a great pair of socks at the end of the year, but you got no shoes to put them in. But I'm glad the Cubs are going this route. You know, we got three players you invested $350 million in, and I don't want to turn the Cubs into these 1980 Yankees teams where high-priced free agents get you not even a cup of soup by the end of the year. Thanks, Hub.
Joe, thank you for the call. There's an awful lot to unpack there. I will say as far as the contracts, I have been adamant that there is no player in baseball, including Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, that I would give a 10-year, $300 million deal to. It's been tried a few times. It's never worked. You look at Albert Pujols. Now, I know these kids are younger than that, but look at Giancarlo Stanton, who was the same age. The Marlins couldn't wait to get out from under that contract in a couple years. I mean, it's a bad idea to tie up that much money over that long a period of time, no matter how old these players are. And I'm glad the Cubs are not caught up in it right now. Although I would say if they had not given bad deals to Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood, I'm not so sure they wouldn't be. So it's a little hard to credit them for that. As far as Madden, I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't agree with you totally. I think what he's doing is having fun. And I think one of the reasons they've been as successful as they have over the last 4 years, and they're the winningest team in baseball, is because the kids have fun and because they don't get burnt out and because they like playing for Madden. So I think you got to balance some of that out. I mean, you know, some of it's not my style. Dressing up in onesies to go on an airplane is pretty stupid as far as I'm concerned for young adults. But hey, if that's something that creates team spirit, then go ahead, you know, and stay with it. So I have issues with Joe Madden, for the most part, how he handles his pitching staff. I mean, I can't even say as a game manager. I mean, he doesn't go long enough with his starters. He doesn't trust them deep enough, and then he gets in trouble with too many changes in the bullpen, and he's obviously burnt out some closers in the last couple of years. But all that said, I think he's one of the best managers in baseball. I don't know how you're going to do better, and he did something nobody else has done here in 108 years. And so whenever we're ready to chuck it in, take a step back and remember what's most important, and they've got the talent to make a run at it again, and I think it's going to be a great season at Wrigley and right here on the Score. So we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to take more of your calls in a moment, 312-644-6767. Bill, you're next. Jordan is in my favorite city. Well, no, I'm not so sure he is. It says Columbia, MI. I thought Columbia, Missouri. Maybe it's Columbia, Michigan. We'll figure it out, Jordan. I'm going to talk to you in just a moment right here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Well, we are in the home stretch. I don't know how time flies by as quick as it does when I get to visit with you all. I am Hub Arkish, been sitting in for Lawrence Holmes this evening. Lawrence will be back in his normal slot tomorrow from 6 to 10. I'm going to hand it off to Julie DeCaro in just about 15, 20 minutes. Julie will take you through a couple more hours of the best sports talk in town. It will be with Julie. I don't know if it has been the last couple hours, but I will know it will be when she gets in. And I'm looking forward to listening on my way home. But right now, we've still got some time to take some phone calls, 312-644-6767. Bill, I believe, is in the car out on the tri-state. Bill, how you doing?
Good, Hop. A quick question for you. Regarding this Bears offense, you have an opportunity to upgrade one of three positions, and I mean significantly upgrade. Running back, tight end, or one of the offensive line positions, which would you select and why?
Well, I would definitely start with offensive tackle, and I think they could probably use upgrades on both sides. Bobby Massey is actually a free agent, so they're going to have to make a decision there. But I would be more anxious to upgrade the left side, and it's not a rap on Charles Leno. It's not that Charles Leno is a bad football player. He's not that good and he's not consistent enough. He struggles with any kind of a speed rush, and in the run game, you're never quite sure what you're going to get. His technique is very good, but he's not a real physical guy. And I think the biggest question that the Bears have to answer this year, that Matt Nagy has to answer, is how is his running game going to mesh with his passing game? Because he told us himself late in the season that the thing that maybe he felt he had the most work to do is that they had not yet figured out what to do with their running game. And I think some of that is looking for a different style running back. We know that no matter how good Jordan Howard is, he may not be a perfect fit for what Matt Nagy wants to do. But even with that, they got to block it better, because there were plenty of games when they were blocking it right and playing straight ahead football, especially late in the season where Howard took off a little bit. And I think they can get better at offensive tackle. Now, you know, they probably could get better at all three positions. They may be able to get better internally at tight end if Adam Shaheen improves and Trey Burton has another year under his belt. And we've seen that Jordan Howard can be a Pro Bowl back. So as much as I'd expect changes in all three spots, I think the most important is probably offensive tackle.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks, Hop.
All right, Bill, thank you for the phone call. I do appreciate it. All right, Jordan, I believe it's Columbia, Missouri. I don't know if my name's on any buildings down there, but I feel like I built one or two. I sent a couple of kids through J school down there, actually through started in the J school. They were all over the school. My daughter even got her master's down there. But it is absolutely one of my favorite college towns in the country. Spectacular town. I hope you're enjoying Mizzou.
It's great. It's like the Austin of Missouri down here. I'm kind of a transplant stuck down here, but I love it so far. I got two quick points for you.
Mm-hmm.
Been racking my brain trying to figure this OT thing out, and the best solution I came up with is probably you do score for score, touchdown for touchdown, but then no field goals. That's the only thing I've been able to come up with. And then my other thing is, what do you think about going for an onside kick to start overtime if it is the way it is right now? I think Andy Reid would be somebody who would kind of do that, considering that if you get the onside kick, you kind of null and void the possession for the receiving team anyway. I'll hang up and see what you think.
Well, before you hang up, though, Jordan, the first thing you said was eliminate field goals. I'm not sure I followed you there.
You know, like kind of what the current format is, where you have to go score for score, otherwise it becomes sudden death.
Right.
But then have no field goal be an option. Like you have to get a touchdown the first time and then answer with another touchdown.
Okay, so but you wouldn't allow them to try field goals in overtime? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, that's
well, but I think the problem there is that the idea of overtime is to have fewer ties, and you could end up with a lot more ties that way. And again,
yeah, I guess maybe you have to go for two or something. I don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, here's the issue, and I don't know. And again, there's no right or wrong here. I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. We all have our opinions. I'm not that hung up on overtime. To me, it's a simple fix. I think that they were on the right track when they said if the team to get possession first kicks a field goal, the other team gets a possession. I don't understand why it's not the same for touchdowns. If a team that gets possession first gets a touchdown, the other team should still get a possession. If they score a touchdown, then both teams have had a chance to score and a chance to play defense. And then, as far as I'm concerned, next team to score wins. That's the same way it would be in regulation. You know, you don't have these rules at the end of regulation. Other than that, though, I don't think you got to change all that much. I don't understand why, you know, you can't win with a field goal, but you can win with a touchdown.
I agree with you on that point. The other thing I would think would be getting rid of the coin flip and just having it be an extension of regulation, like an extra quarter, you know, where the last team who possessed it can keep it going to the quarter, just to get rid of the randomness of it.
Yeah, that's a thought. It's an interesting thought. Of course, it is different from the game, though. It would actually
Absolutely.
It should go to the team that didn't possess it. I don't know. You know, we can play with it a lot. But
yeah.
Jordan, thank you. I appreciate the phone call. It is an interesting topic of conversation. I think that right now, coming out of yesterday, which was an absolutely spectacular day of football, I think the league has a much bigger problem with the officiating than it necessarily does with the overtime rules. I don't think overtime is that broken. I think it could be better. The officiating, though, they got to do something, because you cannot have. And again, I refuse to believe or accept that it's why the Saints lost. They still had every chance to win, but it wasn't fair. You can't have calls that bad that you can't do something about. That I certainly do agree with anybody else who wants to make that point. We got time for one more call. Let's go out to Jefferson Park and welcome Matt into the show. Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good, Hub. I love the show so far.
Thank you.
I wanted to provide my idea for overtime. It's a little bit of a wrinkle out of college, but let's say the first team takes the ball, goes down, and scores. They're then forced to go for two.
Mm-hmm.
If they get it, they win the game. If they do not, the opposing team gets an opportunity to go down and score. And if they do, they also have to go for two. I think it adds a little bit more of a chance that the game won't end in a tie, but also rewards the team for going down and scoring and then getting an additional 2-point conversion. I'll hang up and listen to your thoughts.
You know, Matt, it's not a bad thought, but it still doesn't answer my problem, because you're still only giving one team a chance to score. If they get the touchdown and they get the two, you're penalizing the other team for not being good enough on defense, but the winning team didn't have to play defense. So it still doesn't make sense to me. I just think that both teams should get a chance. Now, if what we're saying is that the first team scores a touchdown has to go for two, even if they get it, the other team gets a chance to score a touchdown, then they obviously have to go for two. I'm fine with that. But my concern is real simple, which is, I think that if you're going to go to overtime, the game should, there should be no risk of the game being decided by a coin toss. Both teams should get a chance to win the game, no matter what the first team with possession does. I don't see it as being that complicated, but obviously I'm missing something, because it sounds like the majority don't agree with me. So, again, guys, that's what's great about Sports Talk Radio. We've all got opinions. Some are perhaps more nuanced than others. Some may be a little more researched or educated than others, but they're still just our opinions, and that's why it's fun to talk about this stuff. One more. I think this must be the same person, because I've got six texts here that are all worded the same way, and it keeps popping up. I don't have time to go back and check the phone number. Hub, comma, honestly, can the Bears sign Robbie Gould, question mark? I'm pretty sure I've seen that text pop up about three or four different times. Honestly, yes, they can. But Robbie Gould is a free agent. The Bears are not over the salary cap. It's really that simple. If they want to, they can. I don't think that's what you're asking me. Would Robbie Gould consider signing with the Bears? Robbie absolutely would. Robbie still lives here in Chicago. He didn't want to leave. I'm sure he's still not happy about the circumstances under which he left, but I know he's not planning on retiring. And if he wants to play somewhere, why not come back somewhere where he would be welcomed, treated as a returning hero? He is the leading scorer in Chicago Bears history. It makes all the sense in the world. Would Ryan Pace make such a move? I can't speak for Ryan, but I can tell you that according to all the sources I've been able to check and all the research I've been able to do, the decision to cut Robbie in the first place was forced by then special teams coach Jeff Rogers and John Fox. They were the ones who wanted to make the move. Certainly Ryan Pace had to agree to it, but my understanding is it wasn't his idea, that he was willing to be convinced. That in itself is enough. And Ryan has been pretty good about admitting some mistakes. I mean, he'll correct things quickly. He doesn't stick by him. He moves on and tries to get it better. And so I don't see why he would have any problem with it. Where it becomes problematic, the Bears aren't in salary cap trouble. Right now, they've got about, it looks like they'll have about $20 million in cap space. And my guess is that Deion Sims won't be back, which would save another $7 or $8 million. So they're going to have $25 to $30 million in cap space once they're done adjusting some contracts and doing whatever they do. They do have to make decisions on three starters: right tackle Bobby Massey, safety Adrian Amos, and nickel Bryce Callahan. If you don't re-sign them, you got to find other starters. Now, do you think that guy's on the roster? They really like this kid Rashad Coward, who's been on the practice squad this year. If he was able to step in and play that position, well, he's on his rookie contract, so he just saved another $5 million in cap space. If you think that Kevin Tolliver can be, you know, your nickel corner, or somebody else can slide inside, if you think that Deion Bush or DeAndre Houston Carson is ready to start at safety, well, then you don't have to spend any of that money on those guys. But I'm not sure that that's where the Bears are at. I think they got to re-sign one or two of those guys or find another free agent at a similar salary. So now you're probably down to about $12 to $15 million in cap space. You're going to eat $4 million in dead cap money on Cody Parkey if he's not back. Robbie Gould, I don't think, wants a pound of flesh. He's not that kind of guy. I think he'd like to be in Chicago, but there's also no reason for him to give any hometown discounts. He is the second most accurate place kicker in the history of the National Football League. He's going to want the $3 million a year that is the going rate. He's going to want at least a couple years. It is going to strain your cap a little bit. So I don't think the problem is anybody's feelings or beliefs. I think it's where you're at in the cap and whether you can afford to have that much money tied up in a place kicker. Guys, I am a little bit over my time. I can tell you the top of the hour is going to be brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division, the Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. I want to pass out some thanks. We had an incredible lineup of guests tonight. Mike Petraglia, who covers the New England Patriots for CLNS Media, was good enough to stop by. My partner on the pregame show here on The Score, Patrick Manley, was here. Eric Edholm from ProFootballWeekly.com checked in from Mobile, Alabama. Joe Curley covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star. And Gonzo, Mark Gonzalez, who does such a great job on the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune, stopped by. I want to thank Mike Chen and Chris Dickens. Outstanding job tonight, guys. They're the ones who make the show go. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening, for calling and texting. It has been a pleasure. I'll be back tomorrow at 5 with McNeil and Parkins, but stay right where you're at now. Julie DeCaro in for the next couple hours with the best sports talk in town. You've got The Score.
We're back on track, right? Right here.
Bears.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.